This is Gulf Coast Life from WGCU. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. In Naples, a slate of candidates is vying for three city council seats in an election set for February 3rd. Ahead of the election, the League of Women Voters of Collier County, Greater Naples Leadership, and other members of the Collier County Forum Coalition recently held a candidate forum moderated by Naples Daily News executive editor Wendy Fullerton Powell and myself. For today's episode of Gulf Coast Life, we're listening back to a condensed version of that forum during which all eight candidates were given an opportunity to respond to the same questions. Candidates in the race include Dan Barone, Ted Blankenship, Ray Christman, John Kroll, John Langley, Sally Peterson, Scott Schultz, and Penny Taylor. The top three vote-getters in the election will gain a seat on the council. There is no early voting in this election. Registered voters can cast their ballots at their voting precinct on Election Day, which again is February 3rd. January 22nd is the deadline to request a vote by mail ballot. Mail-in ballots must be sent back by January 27th or dropped off at the Collier County Supervisor of Elections office by 5 p.m. on Election Day. We'll begin by hearing candidates' opening statements. Let's listen.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Ray Christman. I'd like to first thank the League and others who are involved in sponsoring this event and thank everybody in the room and who's watching on TV for attending. I've had the privilege of serving you on City Council since 2019. When I first ran for council, I brought with me years of volunteer experience here in Naples and decades of relevant professional experience in work that helped prepare me for this job. Both as a candidate and then as a councilman, my priorities have been to, one, responsibly manage growth and development, two, protect our natural environment and quality of life, three, support our first responders and the safety of our residents, and four, ensure the stable fiscal management of our city. While there is always more to do, we've made great progress in each of these areas to the benefit of all of our residents.
Right, thank you. Ted Blankenship, your opening statement.
Hello, everyone. My name's Ted Blankenship. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being engaged. I also had the distinct honor and privilege to serve you all on Naples City Council from April 2020 to April 2024. I was part of a unique landslide in 2020 when four incumbents were swept out of office and four new people came in because people were upset with how things were going and how growth was not being managed properly in the city, how pollution was not being handled in our stormwater, and how infrastructure was failing across the city. Fortunately, while I didn't agree with everything council did, of course, during my 4 years, we did accomplish quite a bit. We overhauled the stormwater code. We started the beach outfall pipe removal project. We cleaned up 8 stormwater lakes out of 20-something that are in the city when only one had ever been done before. And we really listened to the residents and tried to enforce and uphold the vision. Thank you.
And Scott Schultz, your opening statement.
Scott Schultz, currently a member of the Planning Advisory Board, the PAB. I'll be here tomorrow. Also, is the appointed chairman of the Collier County Coastal Storm Risk Management Ad Hoc Committee, as appointed by Commissioner Dan Colwell. In the past, I was a money manager, built a business from next to nothing to when I sold it over $5.3 billion. I'm currently working more with Clam Bay and the situation with the water quality there. And resiliency is a major, one of the major issues besides growth and traffic here. So as I look at the situation, I'm volunteering my time and I'm trying to volunteer for you as well and would hope to earn your vote on February 3rd. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And John Langley, your opening statement.
Hi, I'm John Langley. Thank you for being here. I've been a Naples resident since 2002. I've founded, besides a CPA firm, several successful companies, and I was named Collier County Entrepreneur of the Year 2011. I'm active in my Rotary Club, been a member for over 44 years. My platform prioritizes stormwater management, traffic reduction, and a city concierge service for residents. I'm committed to preserving Naples' charm, supporting economic growth, and enhancing quality of life for all residents. There's more information on my website, johnfornaples.com. Thank you.
Thank you. And John Kroll, your opening statement.
Yes, thank you. And thanks thank you to the Women's League of Voters for hosting such a great event. John Kroll, I'm running for city council. I've lived in Naples for 22 years, live in Oyster Bay on the water, so I understand what floods are from a firsthand experience. My background, I do have a master's degree in business and undergraduate in finance. I worked part of my career in investment banking, 16 years as a vice president at Goldman Sachs, 5 years as a managing director in Schwab Capital Markets. I currently preside at three real estate related companies I'm president of. I currently also volunteer on numerous nonprofit boards. One particular is the chairman of the Code Enforcement Board, which we meet here. My whole mission is to protect and preserve paradise. And that's became my slogan on my campaign. Why am I doing this? I'm not a politician, but here to continue my public service in a city I love. I will get things done.
Thank you, Mr. Kroll. And Dan Barone, your opening statement.
I thank you everyone for coming tonight and the League of Women Voters for putting this on. My name is Dan Barone. I'm a longtime local. I've lived here since 1991, grew up here, attended local schools, including Naples High School, where I met my wife, Cassie. I'm raising two young daughters, Lorelei and Shalane, here in the city, and they go to local schools. I've got a finance degree from University of Florida, as well as a master's in business administration from Florida Gulf Coast University. In addition to being involved in various local boards, I'm a member of the Planning Advisory Board for the City of Naples. I want to offer a new perspective for council as someone who grew up here, is raising a family currently, and running a local business. Making residents first will be my top priority.
Well, thank you very much. And Penny Taylor, your opening statement.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much, League of Women Voters and Greater Naples leadership, for putting this on. My name is Penny Taylor. I'd like your vote on February the 3rd. I've called Naples home for 46 years. My daughter was born in Naples Community Hospital, and she's a graduate of Naples High School. Naples isn't just where I live. It's where I built my life and raised my family. I was elected to Naples City Council in 2000, served 10 years on that board, 2 years as vice mayor. I was elected to the Board of County Commissioners in 2014, and I served 8 years as District 4 County Commissioner, which included the City of Naples. So for 18 years, I have worked on behalf of the City of Naples at the county and local level. I'm running because we are in trouble. The train is off the track. We have $500 to $600 million worth of stormwater challenges that we must face, or we are in trouble because we need to build resilience. And unfortunately, this council has alienated too many people. Thank you.
Thank you. And Sally Peterson, your opening statement.
I'm Sally Peterson. My husband Tim and I have been residents of Naples
for 4 years. And we first actually came to Naples in 1998 with our very young children. And we actually stayed at the Park Shore Resort and have some fond memories of that visit. And we've been visiting ever since. I'm running for Naples City Council because Naples has changed since that very first visit. The consequences of overdevelopment and its impacts, including congestion and threats to resiliency, impact every single neighborhood. So I'm running so I want to bring a fresh voice and new leadership to City Council. I bring a fresh voice, an objective perspective, and with the energy and passion for public service. I'm a former city council member in Ann Arbor, Michigan, so I bring experience. I also served on the Zoning Board of Appeals, and I understand the complexity of city governance and the responsibility that comes with making hard decisions. I see residents as customers of the city, and I think as we need to...
I know, 1 minute is so short. Well, we're going to move on to our first question, and we're going to begin with Mr. Blankenship. And that question is, if elected, what would be your top two priorities?
My top two priorities are, first of all, stormwater and resiliency. You know, what we went through with Hurricane Ian was terrible. Our house was flooded. So many of our neighbors were flooded, and some of them lost everything, lost their homes. That's awful to go through. I'd hope we never go through it again. I hope our neighbors don't go through it again. So we have to prepare the city for the next storm. We have to upgrade our infrastructure. We have to increase our seawalls. We have to increase the pipe sizes, pumps that we have to deal with the flooding that we already had on rainy days in the summer wet season. So we know we need to upgrade the infrastructure. We need to work with our vendors like Verizon, Florida Power and Light, to harden their infrastructure so that we don't lose power, don't lose cell phone signals. We need to upgrade our sewer infrastructure, our lift stations, so that we have adequate services throughout the next storm. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Schultz?
Same question?
If you want me to repeat it at any time, I'm happy to. And that goes for anybody. But it's what would be your top two priorities if elected?
Thank you. I'd like to continue the work with resiliency that I started on the Collier County Coastal Storm Committee. And I live in the water. I live in the northernmost building in the city of Naples. There currently is not a representative north of the golf course in the city. Development, growth, and traffic are all the same in the bailiwick. On the PAB, I rarely give variances for things that don't make any sense because I think we've got plenty of traffic problems as we stand. The resiliency issues are very significant. And most recently, I've been working with Pelican Bay Services District as it pertains to Clam Bay and the health of that. We've spent 3 hours yesterday, and we have a good dredging plan underway now. And being able to work with Pelican Bay, which is not in the city, but being able to work with them matters a great deal. And my relationship with the County Board of Commissioners and other office holders is so significant. So I think that we need to be having more friends in government, not less. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Langley, same question.
Thank you for the question. My top priority obviously would be stormwater, although I have to say stormwater reconstruction should have started 20 years ago. We knew it was a problem then. We just kicked it down the road until it really became a problem. The second thing I think that really needs to be changed is the culture of City Hall has got to change to be more resident-centric. If we don't change the culture, nothing is still going to get done. We have to change the mindset of the city employees. The city council now is micromanaging every single department. They need to put the work back in the department so things can get done rather than city council trying to make decisions for everything. It's going to be important in the future that city council is nimble and can react quickly to circumstances and think ahead so that we can head off problems that will occur down the road. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Kroll.
Yes, my top two issues are, first one's infrastructure and storm resiliency. Our infrastructure is very old. For example, I look at the pipes in my street, they're cast iron, they're 60 years old, they're 12 inches versus where they should be 30 inches, reinforced concrete pipes. We can't move water fast enough. And some of our old infrastructure, the pipes are clogged. They haven't been maintained. So a short-term need would be even to do maintenance to open up our piping. We need end caps, backflow valves on all our pipes going into the canals and bay. So that needs to be worked on. The second major issue I have is water quality. And we haven't really talked much about water quality in the debates. But water quality of 22 years of being here, I've seen a pretty steady decline. And this does trouble me quite a deal. A few days ago, it was in the Naples Daily News, there was a beach closure in Fort Myers just down the road. And it's, thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Barone.
Most of our issues are pretty apparent because a lot of us are saying the same thing. Stormwater infrastructure is absolutely a top priority. I'd like to add some financial acumen to that because the cost of that is probably going to be the largest project the city's ever undertaken. Also, want to help with the council culture. I'd like to, again, make residents a top priority and be intentional about creating a positive atmosphere for staff in all departments.
Thank you, Mr. Burwell. And Penny Taylor, your top two priorities.
Hurricane Ian revealed a soft underbelly of Naples, the city of Naples, which is the infrastructure. And we have got a proposal from the city manager of $500 to $600 million worth of stormwater improvements that need to be made. That's not the roads and that's not the seawalls. That's just stormwater, and that's today's money. Number one, I would be to identify, to do a matrix, to lay it out with a timeline, and then we need to identify sources, but most importantly, we need to repair the relationships that have been broken by this current council on the local, state, and federal level so that we can bring in partners to help us shoulder this, or either our taxes will go up considerably or the plans we put on the shelf. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Ms. Peterson.
Thank you. The two most important issues, I think, are related: overdevelopment and its consequences, which are threats to resiliency. With regard to overdevelopment, the city has a once-in-a-generation tool right now in terms of reevaluating the comprehensive plan. The problem with the way the city is going about the reevaluation process is that it doesn't include neighborhood priority plans. Those were included in 1998, and they haven't been updated since. The other way we can counter overdevelopment is to make sure that we refine our codes. We audit our codes, our zoning laws and resiliency codes, to make them clear and concise and not prone to misinterpretation, because that's what happens with variances being granted because of lack of consistent interpretation. With regard to resiliency, I'd like the city to adopt the draft 2025 resiliency plan. It's innovative, it's ambitious, and it needs to be funded, and it needs prudent funding.
Thank you. And Ray Crisson, your top two priorities.
Number one, resiliency planning and investment to reduce flood risk. In October, City Council adopted a Naples resiliency plan. We're the first local government in Southwest Florida to have a plan for resiliency. 20 years, $280 million in investment planned, and we identified a funding source to pay for it in our stormwater utility fund. Number two, responsibly manage growth and development to prevent overdevelopment but support quality redevelopment. Because of the action City Council has taken over the last 6 years while I've been on council, we now have everything occurring within code. No development has been approved in Naples in the last 5 years that has not been within code.
Thank you. Next question is on the topic of growth and development. Please share your thoughts regarding redevelopment opportunities in the city, particularly in the post-Ian and future storm environment. And we'll start with Mr. Schultz.
The issues at hand are just trying to drive down the streets here. It's very problematic as there's just far too much traffic. The growth that has happened has been because there's people that have been rewarding their benefactors who give them the money to run for office, i.e. developers. The developers have their slate. They're up here. There's four folks that are backed by the developer crowd. I'm not one of them. I'm on the PAB, and I do not grant variances very often. I think that the growth that has happened, Naples used to be a small town, had a small town feel, but after what's happened with the Four Seasons and then on Third Street, those projects, I think, have altered the nice, homey feel that we have. And if we can try to limit those types of developments, I think that that's something that the city should consider. As it pertains to the local neighborhoods, I think residents first and foremost. If we keep that in mind, I think things lead a lot better. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Langley.
I think redevelopment is a good term, because there's no land in Naples to speak of. Something has to be torn down in order for us to build something. I think if we can control the density of what's being built back and study the traffic, I think we'll be fine. Unfortunately, the relationship between the county and the city is not a good one, and we need to collaborate with the county, because anytime they put any developments in, it impacts the city. And I can't tell you how much it impacts, but it does. The stuff that they're building over on the triangle at Davis Avenue, it's going to impact the city. And I don't think they're funding any impact to the city. And I think we need to have that type of relationship with the county going forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kroll.
Yes, I am not one of those backed by developers like Mr. Schultz has said as well. But the code and zoning has to be followed. As chairman of the code enforcement board, that's what we've done. And our job is to enforce the code. And this variance problem, variances were designed for hardships and for something that materially could help the community as a whole, not for it to be rubber stamped. So it'd be very tough as far as variances go going forward. We do need better coordination between the county and outlying areas, because we do have some leverage there, and we could help control bad growth and bad development. Which, if you look at the Davis Triangle, you probably would take a look at that. I think I'm in Manhattan when I walk there in that little part. But it's the type of thing that we have control of the utilities, for example. We could use that as leverage, even though we're not.
and we need a better relationship with the county. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Barone.
Overdevelopment has been a campaign theme for council as long as I can remember. And it's probably because a lot of people want to move to Naples and will continue to move to Naples. I think that the overgrowth issue, it is an absolute issue, as can be seen by the traffic that we go through every day. And that's due in large part to the county's decision to prioritize development over development and not coming up with creative ways to create local commercial centers. Instead, all we get is residential neighborhoods on top of residential neighborhoods and just increasing the population of the county. We need better relationships with the county so we can have a say on that. The population of the city of Naples is actually declining. We're at around 20,000, and the comprehensive plan analysis already has shown that over the next 5 to 10 years, that will actually decrease slightly. So better relationships with the county so we can plan growth smarter is the top priority, I think.
Thank you. Ms. Taylor.
I'm confused a little bit about redevelopment opportunities. I would say redevelopment necessities because people lost their homes. And so there, that is going on. In terms of the commercial area, it will be redevelopment, but it's not going to be what we've seen in the past. There is an area coming into the city that is poised for redevelopment. I think that it's critical that we have a good relationship with the county because we share borders, and I think there is a possible way that we can influence and actually be at the table before these projects are approved, that we're in the planning process. It's called EJT, Extra Territorial Jurisdiction. It is something that I would like to bring to the city council if I'm elected and then bring it to the commission. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Peterson.
Thank you. I think the city of Naples can manage growth responsibly through redevelopment and still preserve the charm and character of our community. I think managing growth and charm and character are not mutually exclusive. And I think there are two things that we can do that would help that. The first one, as I said before, we need to review our codes and tighten them, make sure they're clear and concise and not open to misinterpretation. The second thing that I would like to do if I were elected to city council was to introduce incentives for homeowners who are remodeling their home to provide deeper setbacks voluntarily, more permeable surfaces, rain gardens, water basins, anything that they could do that actually makes more permeable surface on their homes also protects the charm and character, but they should be incentivized to do that.
Thank you. Mr. Crisman.
When people talk about overdevelopment and too much growth, I think they're looking at three things. Number one, traffic coming in from the county into the city, 1.5 million vehicles a week. I'll say it again, 1.5 million vehicles a week coming into the city from the county during season. Number two, the large development projects on the doorstep of the city, like the Davis Triangle. And number three, projects that were built in Naples a decade or more ago, or permitted more than a decade or more ago, that were in excess of our zoning code, like Naples Square and the old Naples Hotel at 3rd and Broad. We've tightened our variances. Site plan deviations are not permitted. We put our charter height amendment into code in the last 6 years on the current council. All of these things mean that new development in the city is now being done according to code. We need quality redevelopment along our commercial corridors. It must be done still according to code.
Thank you. Mr. Blankenship.
Redevelopment has to be managed very carefully. As we did in my 4 years on council, we didn't get variances for commercial projects, period. We stuck to the 42-foot height limit in the charter, period. As Mr. Crisman said, we incorporated that charter height limit into the code of ordinances to make it even stronger. And we have to be careful that we manage that. I don't think anybody wants a repeat of the variances that were granted by the prior council. You just drive down Gulf Shore Boulevard and see the megalopolis that's emerging around the Four Seasons Hotel. There are going to be 10 large, high buildings crowding Gulf Shore Boulevard, creating a harsh visual impact in our city. We have a similar case in Naples Square on Goodlett Frank Road, where the prior council approved buildings that were too high. Now we see the county doing it right on our doorstep. We need good relations with the county to stop that as well.
Thank you.
And for our next question, we'll begin with Mr. Langley. It's, what measures should the city of Naples champion to address environmental resiliency and damage relating to storm surge, high tides, and rising seas?
Being a flood victim myself, I'm really kind of puzzled as to what they can do about storm surge. I built up a seawall 3 feet higher than it was, and I got flooded from coming down the street. So it didn't come in my backyard, it came down the street. So it's going to have to be a citywide project where we upgrade seawalls, we replant the beach. I would even suggest, and somebody brought it, that's putting a concrete wall under the sand along the beach so that it keeps the sand from being pushed back into the land. Water quality issues. We do a lot of water testing, but nothing ever gets done with it. I think we either stop doing water testing or do something about it when we get bad results back. I live on the water. Nothing's, as far as I'm concerned, ever been done in Clam Bay as far as water quality other than just testing. Thank you.
And Mr. Cole.
Yes. Having lived through a flooded home, a flooded business, and some other flooded properties, I know it's dear to my heart, this issue. Resiliency and stormwater management are critical. We have to start with our outer barrier of protection first, our coastal region, where there's natural mangroves, dunes with seagrass, with grass plantings on it. These are things help break the water from coming in as well. So start first with our coastal, our first wave of defense, our coastal areas. Then we have to go in. Our stormwater system's archaic. The gravity is not going to do it in some real low-lying areas. So we have to go through with some pumping, some wet pumps in some areas. So we have to modernize that and look at our piping. We have to maybe do some maintenance work on old piping till they could be replaced. But we have to get the new pipes in the ground as quick as possible. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Barone?
Well, there's the whole aspect of when storm surge comes, it totally removes the beach, essentially. I believe we invested a lot of money into having sand brought in over the last few years, and, Hurricane Ian wiped all of that out. So I think coming up with, a natural barrier to the storm surge can help that. I'm not a stormwater engineer, so I'm not going to come up here and pretend that I have all of the solutions. What I will do is I'll listen to the experts that come across and make sure the council acts on them. Our stormwater infrastructure, as we're all saying up here, is completely needs to be redone. And we need to start on that project right away. When the engineers come through with the recommendations to get started, we need to begin. We can't delay. We can't do the whole city at once. We just need to get started.
Thank you. And Penny Taylor.
Thank you. We have a $500 to $600 million stormwater plan that needs to be enacted. That's number one. Number two, elevate. We have to figure out how to incentivize folks to elevate their homes. There's a reason the state of Florida put $400 million this year into Elevate Florida. That's what is going to make the difference. Also, it's important that we keep the dunes vital on the beach. We can't make them too high, but it's very important not only to build those dunes, but to take care of them and not walk over them. And that happens a lot of time. Finally, I think, again, as my colleagues have said up here, we really need to look at the infrastructure in this community to make sure that when the water comes, we can get it out. And that's the most important part of it. Thank you.
And Sally Peterson.
Thanks. I think if the city of Naples wants to champion resiliency, we need to ask the residents in every single neighborhood. We were talking about the storm drainage project that is going on that's multi-millions of dollars. And the city did some extensive studies, the Kenley Horn study, to identify where the problems were. And then the city made their own priorities, but left out many neighborhoods to the north, to the east, especially River Park East, Seagate, Park Shore. What I would like to do if I were elected to city council is to create a resident city resiliency task force. And the way that would work would be chaired by the vice mayor. The staff representative would be Dr. George, who is the new chief infrastructure director. And every neighborhood would have representations because residents know what works best in their community, and they would have a direct line to city council to have their priorities listened to and responded to.
Thank you. And Mr. Crisman.
Yes, we can reduce flood risk. We can't eliminate it, but there's lots we can do to reduce it. Offshore, nature-based solutions like artificial reefs, onshore beach restoration, dune strengthening, planting native grasses, inland storm water system upgrades, which we've talked about. There are other things as well. We have a system of 28 stormwater retention lakes in the city. City Council put together a master plan about 6 or 7 years ago to upgrade and clean and restore them. We've completed 8 of them. 3 of them that we did are actually cleaning the water that's going to go into the new outfall pipes at the Gulf Shore beach outfall project. And finally, we're about to implement a new seawall ordinance that will set new height limits uniformly for our 44 miles of seawalls.
Thank you. And Mr. Blankenship.
The good news is we've already started. So after years of delay, we started the Old Naples project to remove the 10 outfall pipes from the beach and implement water quality improvement initiatives as part of that to pump clean water well offshore and not have the flooding that we were having in Old Naples. So we've got to see that project through completion, and I'm sure we'll learn from that how it will benefit our other neighborhoods. We also need to complete the inventory of needed projects. Several neighborhoods have been assessed for their problems and issues and the potential fixes, but other neighborhoods haven't. So we need to finish that part. There's some quick things we can do. We need to adjust the seawall heights, as Mr. Crisman said, and get that going. That can help with storm surge and the rainy season flooding that we have. We also need the backflow preventers. We started that process. That if we had backflow preventers on all the pipes that lead into Naples Bay, Moorings Bay, or even into the Gulf, we can stop the flooding that comes back into our neighborhoods.
Thank you. And Scott Schultz.
Thank you. When Army Corps of Engineers 1 plan came through, I was a serious opponent to that. That was beaten back. When Army Corps 2 came, the County Board of Commissioners reached out to me and asked me if I'd be willing to serve. I agreed to do so. I was appointed by Commissioner Dan Kowal. And the education I got during that was very, very fruitful. What I learned is that you can't really do much offshore because you're going to interfere with the sea turtles and their nesting patterns. So you've got to be very cautious on what you do along the coastline with that type of material. And the amount of money being proposed, $80 million for something off the shore that is going to be problematic in the first place, is another matter. The other things that I learned was that the community doesn't have a big appetite for a lot of walls and sluice gates and pump systems. There's not a big appetite for structures along the waterfront. I think we need to address that with the residents and be sure that they are on board with that. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is on quality of life. What specific actions will you take toward the updates in the current Naples Comprehensive Plan? And we'll start with Mr. Kroll.
Well, my third top priority is actually community. And quality of life is important. And we have to stick to our plans, but we also need staff to also follow the plan, too. It's very important to have a plan and to follow it. I'll give you an example. All these things impact us. For us to have events in Cambier now, we got labeled the third most dangerous park in the country. But that's an easy fix. If you put bollards around it, like most new parks going in, they do a security plan. But when city council looked at renovating the playground in there, they didn't look at a new security plan to update that. So things like that, that affect our community a great deal. And our quality of life are very important to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Barone.
For quality of life, especially through the comprehensive plan, that's something that we're all going to be looking at very shortly here. A comprehensive plan, as you all know, is in process right now. And being a member of the Planning Advisory Board, that's part of what we do. I think the main things that will improve quality of life will be paying attention, special attention to parks, walkability, community events, to hopefully to have some aspect of a traffic study done so we can figure out how to lessen traffic. That's going to, again, involve some interaction with the county. I'm not sure how many traffic lights in the city of Naples are actually under the jurisdiction of the city. So we need to work collaboratively with them because I know, you know, my quality of life would improve a lot better, a lot more if, you know, I could drive down 41 without, you know, taking 20 minutes to get 10 blocks. So thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Taylor.
The comprehensive plan is the most important document in a government because it's how the people speak. And it's created by going out to you and asking you what you want for your future and what you want your town to be. And now it's in a process. So one of the most important things that I would encourage is people speaking. We have to come. We have to participate in it. And the second part is if we must look at traffic, we have to understand how traffic moves, how we make it move, and also how we maximize green space and open space in our town. We are the green jewel. Let's keep us the green jewel. But I think it's critically important that we have buy-in by our residents, because in some cases, it might mean that you might want to do things a little bit differently. Maybe your house isn't quite as big as you want it to be, but there's a reason for it. But you have to agree to it. You would have to. It's very similar to what my colleague talked. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Peterson.
This is a nice handoff, actually. Again, the comprehensive plan is a once-in-a-generation opportunity for this community to say what we want the look, feel, and quality of life aspects be for the next generation. The statement of work that the city has signed leaves out two things. There is not enough resident engagement. There's been one day of it. It's well on its way. There needs to be much more resident engagement. And that is why I want to bring back the neighborhood improvement plans. The statement of work doesn't include those. Here they are. These are the neighborhood improvement plans from 1998, and they have not been updated this century. And so I would like to lead the charge to make them part of the next comprehensive plan and codified as such. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Christman.
Well, just to make sure everybody understands, we're in the process, the early innings of updating our comprehensive plan. Very important initiative that has many ramifications for the city. In terms of quality of life, what I think about when we talk about quality of life are the natural features and assets of Naples. Beach maintenance and restoration being an important objective. Trees and medians, we're a tree city. People recognize it. Naples, among other things, for the fact, for our magnificent canopy of trees, and parks and green space. And we happen to be doing concurrently right now an update to our parks master plan. We have five major parks and a number of other smaller parks in the city. We need to think about turning this into a world-class park system. I think it's a good aspiration to have. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Blankenship.
Yes, I'm glad the comprehensive plan update is going on now. It has started, but it's not too far along so that the three new council members will have a chance to get involved and help shape that how it turns out. It is critical to get enough resident input here during season. This is a type of project that should not be done off season. It should be done while most people are here and can input and participate in the workshops and hear each other, learn from each other, and have a really constructive, collaborative process. I also support, as Sally said, bringing back the neighborhood plans. In fact, we voted on that on City Council back when I was on to add back the neighborhood plans. I think that's a critical element because we know the neighborhoods are all different. We know what happens in one part of the city is different than the other city. The needs are different. We need to recognize that and build it into the plan, which then becomes a feed into the annual budget process and the capital improvement plan so that we can address each neighborhood's needs.
Thank you. Mr. Schultz.
Could you please repeat the question?
Sure. What specific actions will you take toward the updates of the current Naples Comprehensive Plan?
Thank you. The opportunity for us to, on the Planning Advisory Board, we We are rarely unanimous in anything, but we were 7-0 in suggesting to City Council that they have the input sessions when the resident taxpayers are in town. It's a residents first program that got put in, let's do this in November. No, I was the one that led the fight on that. It was my motion that passed, and that's what prompted me to run for City Council, is we got overruled on that, and the PAB is the number one land use advisory board in the city. So when City Council said, no, we don't, we're just going to go with in November because it's more convenient for the consultants, that just got me going. And so I thought that was unusual. I forecast at that time, we're not going to have very many people here because it's in November. So that was very frustrating. The quality of life, I think, has a whole lot to do with how we interact with our government agencies or government bodies around us as well. So we need to really improve our relationships with those folks.
Thank you. Mr. Langley.
The takeaway that I got from that workshop was the plan's nice and good, but it shouldn't be really called a plan. It should be called a vision, because there's really no actionable items inside the plan itself. It says what we want, where we want to be, but it doesn't really say how to get there. So that's left up to the interpretation of City Council and whoever is trying to implement this plan. I think I know why we have it, because it's required, but I think it needs to have some actionable items in it so that we can get our hands into it. Also, I just want to say I enjoy a pretty good quality of life in Naples. I love living here, and there's probably no other place in the country I'd want to live other than being right here. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, and our next question, we're going to start with Dan Barone. And this is, if elected to City Council, what would be your approach to issues that impact the city of Naples, but that are ultimately decided by the Collier County Commission?
Yeah, I feel like over the last few years, the Naples City Council has grown more and more isolationist. We kind of operate where, you know, we're the city, we can take care of ourselves, we don't need any outside help. And that's just a poor setup for how we need to govern ourselves. We need to work collaboratively with both the county, state, and federal governments. We can't do this alone. The city's about 20,000 residents. The county has about 400,000. So the county residents come in here. They affect resources of the city. We should be, we should expect the county to kind of help us with that, and they should put up a fair share in the responsibility for managing the use of our resources, as well as other interlocal agreements that we have.
Thank you. And Penny Taylor. The question is, if elected to City Council, what would be your approach to issues that impact the city of Naples that are ultimately decided by Collier County Commissioners?
My approach, if I was elected, would be to work on restoring relationships with the county and then talk about extraterritorial jurisdiction. It would be very important to bring to the county the cost of their development to the city, and it would be very important to discuss traffic and those issues. Now, it would be lovely if extraterritorial jurisdiction could be codified. That's way down the road. But we must begin the dialogue. We must repair. We must repair this relationship. There is an attitude that we are the city and we don't need you, and you are just big and bad, and we are so important that we don't need to get near you. And that's a problem. That's an attitude that's been expressed. We need to understand that we're in this together, that growth is here, and that we work together to hopefully understand they have rights to grow, but at the same time, it affects us and how we handle that. Thank you.
Thank you. And Sally Peterson.
Thank you. I think in terms of dealing with the issues of growth in the county, in the city of Naples, I think there's a short-term answer and a long-term answer. And the short-term answer is to prepare for the impact that growth will have on our infrastructure. Davis Triangle is a good example. It's right outside the city limits. It's going to have thousands of more people. I worry about those bridges that are the entrance to downtown Naples. Thousands more people cycling, walking, motorists. We need to prepare the infrastructure for that kind of impact. There's another example, Clam Pass Cove, across from the Seagate neighborhood at the Naples Grand Hotel, the water park. I'm hoping we won't have to prepare for that impact, but I'm hoping that
through collective advocacy and relentlessness from the city and all the neighbors and all the people that have signed the 1,800 signatures, that will make a difference. In the long term, yes, we need to build better relationships. It's going to take time.
Thank you. And Ray Christman.
The good news is that at the professional staff level, the relationships between county and city staff are excellent. Every day of the week, they work together on issues and make things happen. The wheels of government go on. We have over 30 interlocal agreements between the city and county involving things like beach parking and water and sewer service. The debris from the pier is going to be stored through an interlocal agreement in a park in the county, for example. The political relationships are different, because there are philosophical differences between elected officials in the city and the county. And I know all the county commissioners, I have good personal relations with them, but we think about things differently, like growth and development. And when you consider that 5% of the city population is only 5% of the county population, you get to the nub of the problem that we have.
Thank you. Mr. Blankenship.
Thank you for pointing that out. I was also going to acknowledge the good work that our staff does with county staff. They coordinate very well together. They have very good relations. The county has been very supportive with Ian recovery efforts. They've also funded the beach renourishment for us. They've also made a sizable grant for the pier reconstruction. And in many other ways that the county does support us with support services and special projects. However, we do need to work on our relationships at the city council, county commissioner level. I also fortunately have good relations with the existing county commissioners and would like to continue to work on those, develop those on our shared issues, like the growth that's happening in the county right outside of city limits, these tall buildings that are proposed. We have to find a way to try to mitigate the impact or reduce the impact of those potential projects that are being proposed. We also have shared issues like water quality and stormwater infrastructure that we should work on together.
Thank you. And Scott Schultz?
Thank you for the question. When the county needed somebody on the Coastal Storm Risk Committee, I was the first appointee that County Commissioner Dan Colwell made and ended up becoming the chair of that. I communicate with County Commissioner Colwell and the other gentlemen there because they appointed me. And I've got really good relations with those folks. I also have good relationships with the state reps and state senators because a lot of funding can come from Tallahassee to help us with this. But as far as trying to build relationships with the County Board of Commissioners, I already have those. And I'd like to put those to use to work with the County Board of Commissioners on behalf of the city in a very constructive and collegial manner to attack the mutual problem. I think the County Board of Commissioners has a different agenda. They do have a lot of growth. While I have coffee and breakfast with these folks at least monthly, they're also personal friends of mine, so I don't think I'm going to have the building of relationships that already is there. Thank you.
Thank you. And John Langley.
I grew up in Jacksonville, Florida. The city and the county didn't get along. So the city decided to just take over the whole county. So that's what they did. They consolidated the entire county into the city. End the problem. I'm not suggesting that we do that here, but also want to say that developers aren't the bad guys in this. They only get to do what the city council or the board of county commission lets them do. And they're just businessmen trying to make a living. So I think the collaboration with the county has got to be on the forefront of what we do as a city council to help them understand that what the impact of us on us is directly proportion to the growth in the county, and that we really need to have some meetings of the mind so that we can slow that down to a degree.
Thank you. And Mr. Kroll.
Yes, thank you. Intergovernmental coordination is necessary. I did serve on a government relations committee in the county, and I know all the commissioners well. Caldwell, our assigned commissioner in our district, we need coordinate meetings. We need to get this on track. The interlocal agreements are something that, you know, we should continue to look at if there's anything else we could do. Joint planning agreements, coordination meetings with planners, These are things that we should be talking about and doing and reaching out and being proactive about it. That would be my approach. And like I said, the city does have a lot of, some of the watersheds are in the county that affect us. So we need to talk more about that. There's, I don't see any discussions going on about that. We do control the utilities for a lot of the county, the water and sewer. So that's something too that we have as leverage to, for more dialogue.
Thank you. And the last question from us is on taxation. How do you balance the needs for infrastructure improvement and city services while acknowledging resident and businesses' sensitivity for rising taxes? And Penny Taylor, we will start with you.
That's the elephant in the room. How are we going to do it? So there's a lot of ways to tackle it. Raising people's taxes is not one of them, as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, they've done it, and the council has raised stormwater rates last year by 40%. And this year, over the next 4 years, by 144%. What we need to do is look at different funding sources, look at different opportunities for bonding, and also not to look at carefully floating another surtax and have the tourists pay an extra penny or whatever, however it's decided, towards the infrastructure. Most important, this would be a vote of the people, and there would be a sunset, and the projects would be identified. And that's where the county would come in. It could be the county would be interested in joining us. I saw the results of the last surtax and how it helped the county, and it could help us. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Peterson.
Yeah, I think this is where you want all of us to say no new taxes. So I'm just going to say I hope that could be the future. But Penny's right there. The stormwater rates are going up 25% over the next 4 years. I think in terms of paying for our resiliency plans, we need to be, you know, city council, the staff needs to leave no stone unturned. There is something called the Resilience Florida program that offers grants for, and the city of Naples has taken one of these grants before, to do a lot of assessment and improvements on infrastructure. I think the last one went to Gulf Shore Boulevard. We need to make sure that those are continuing to be explored. I also think that one day NOAA and the EPA and FEMA will be refunded. I know we got money for the Naples Pier, but I think in the future, I'm cautiously optimistic that those programs will be refunded.
Thank you. Mr. Christman.
Council has exercised good fiscal management over a period of years. We have the fifth lowest millage rate in the state among cities with 5,000 or more people. We have substantial reserves well above our minimums, even after COVID and 5 hurricanes in 3 years. When you look at our budget, our property tax revenue, which is the only discretionary form of it, of revenue that we have, 80% of it goes to fund public safety and quality of life. And if that revenue is diminished because of, for example, some of the proposals that are being made in Tallahassee as we speak, this city will no longer be able to fund our police at proper levels or invest in these quality of life investments that are so important to us. It's my big worry about an unintended consequence that could happen to us here in the next year.
Thank you. Mr. Blankenship.
I definitely don't think we need to increase property tax rates. There's several dynamics going on. We all know property values continue to go up. Over the last several years, we've had double-digit increases in property values. So keeping the tax rate constant, we automatically get more revenues by property values going up. As homes sell, as all these new condos come online and are sold to people, that's more new revenue that we didn't have before. And that hasn't been included in the projections for the budgets and the stormwater needs, but we need to consider that before we ever look at increasing property taxes. There are also, I believe, significant saving opportunities in the current budget. I believe there are areas of waste that could be eliminated. The ways we bid projects, the way we manage projects, all the change orders that get approved that shouldn't be approved. There are clear savings that we could have today.
Thank you. Mr. Schultz.
It comes down to relationships. The ability to work with our state representatives and senators matters a great deal because the big bucket of money is in Tallahassee.
And if we had a state representative relationship with our senator and our representative, there's a lot of money that flows in and out of Tallahassee. We don't have an advocate there for us because we're constantly calling their names and fighting with them. If we want to have more benefits to the city, it's better that we get along with everybody, or at least try to, instead of calling names and doubling down on calling names. I look at this far differently than others do. The taxes that we send to Tallahassee versus what we get back are not that good. But if we had relationships with our state representative, state senator, congressman, governor, we'd have a lot more better opportunities, to be able to get revenue back from the state, from the feds. But we can't be calling people names. We need to have friends at all the different levels of government. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Langley.
According to current budgets, the city of Naples provides 40% of the county's revenue. We get 13 cents for every dollar real estate taxes collected. It stays in the city. The rest of it goes other places. I don't think raising property taxes is the way to go. I think the city really needs to double down on exploring additional revenue streams, whatever they are, parking fees, impact fees, whatever they are, and then at the same time addressing the expenses that we're currently incurring and look for ways to cut expenses off budget. The 600-pound gorilla is if DeSantis gets his way and knocks out real estate taxes completely. That's a whole other ballgame that we're going to have to, hopefully, we don't need to explore, but, it'd be nice to cut the real estate taxes. But that's going to be a huge issue for the city if, in fact, that happens.
Thank you. Mr. Kroll.
Yeah, there are a lot of options, and the last option should be any kind of tax hike. Grants, obviously, everybody's talking about that. It's very important. FEMA, DEP, Army Corps of Engineers, all these things, you have to exercise full effort on the grants. The tourist tax is one way we could probably get help with the beaches, since they use the beaches, so we could look at that. Stormwater utility fee, that's kind of based on impervious surface, and it's user pay, so that's one user type of way to, so using more, they get taxed more. So that may be one thing to look at. Ted mentioned about bidding projects. I think we have to manage the city differently. We need to do smaller projects and get more people bidding on them, like 20 versus a big project where you get three. So you're going to get a better result with more people bidding on projects.
Thank you. Mr. Barone.
So we can take advantage of the low-hanging fruit first. By eliminating costly delays and doing some preventative spending, we can save some money in that respect and be able to have more available to tackle these projects. I think we absolutely have to look at, the rest of the, diverse financial toolkit, looking for external funding sources like grants and bonds. Our percentage of the property taxes, which has been mentioned before, 14 cents in every dollar, that's all we get from property taxes. And again, this could all be moot if the laws change. So we really need to look at all of this in detail, because the landscape that we're all talking about right now could look drastically different, within a year.
This has been a condensed rebroadcast of the League of Women Voters of Collier County's recent Naples City Council Candidate Forum, moderated by me, John Davis, and Naples Daily News Executive Editor Wendy Fullerton Powell. The top three vote-getters will gain a seat on the council in the February 3rd election. This Thursday, January 22nd, is the deadline to request a vote-by-mail ballot. The forum in its entirety, including audience questions and closing statements, is available to stream at naplesgov.com, and we'll have a link to that stream at wgcu.org/GCL. For now, thanks for listening. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, and PR for Southwest Florida.